Hello, Pokeminders!
And welcome to our weekly PokePod,
where we discuss everything related to mental well-being as well as our journey as a startup.
I'm your host, Yusuf.
And I'm your host, Sarah.
And today, we're gonna poke some minds.
Hello, Pokeminders, and welcome to our new series, Knowing Pokeminders. Today, we're gonna start with Lisa, and she's been with Pokemind for a while now. And we were excited to know more about her. So welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So can you tell us more about who you are and what you do, your background and so on?
Yes, sure. So I did my bachelor in international economic law. And currently I'm pursuing my master's degree in European business law at Lund University in Sweden. So I'm focusing a lot on IP, on AI and big data. So that's how I kind of came into AI topic. And I wrote a lot of articles regarding AI ethics, personal data, and just like some responsibilities as well. So I'm very, very focused on this digital law and innovation aspect.
And what kind of thing made you focus so much on AI? What kind of sparked your interest in AI? Because what you do is not really the main focus. You study quite a few things, so why AI?
Yeah, that's actually true. So my journey into AI began when I was on my second year of my bachelor's degree. And that was exactly the time when self-driving vehicles were becoming a very hot topic. So I was very fascinated by this technology and I wanted to explore it more. So I wrote my first article about it and I considered the decision-making process behind this technology. And later on, the robots also started becoming very popular. So I did also some research and I wrote another article on the impact of AI on the labor market. So I focused on the human workers and if they can actually AI replace them. So after this research, I started to think about what if, for instance, what if the self-driving car will get into an accident and who will be responsible? And in case if AI will replace human workers, how will it influence people? So I decided to look into the human perspective on this aspect and focus on ethics and human rights. So currently I'm working a lot on ethics of AI, the consequences it may have, how to do the way it will be ethical, so we can also ensure individuals' rights and privacy.
Cool. That's quite specific. I haven't met a lot of people that focus on the law of AI and the ethics of AI, because I mean, it's becoming such a hot topic, like you said, and people focus more on the technical side of things, how to make a lot of money out of it. And that's the main focus of a lot of people. But I wanted to ask you a bit more on the articles that you published. I don't know exactly how you got to the point where you just decided to publish articles about these kind of things. Where were they published even? And how did you get to the person that would publish those articles?
Yeah. So during my bachelor, I was very active in the scientific council. So I was eager to try something new for me and be active in the research part. So I performed in different scientific conferences and then people were interested in my research and they offered me the possibility to be published, for instance, in their journal or some materials of the conferences. And that's how I started. And later on, when I was already quite experienced in writing articles, I found some journals by myself. So I just wrote the editors and like, yeah, I'm interested in this sphere. Would it be interested for you to get my article published? So nowadays I have more than 10, 15, I would say, articles published, and they are very different. For instance, here in Sweden, I also got published in two journals and I focused on ethical of AI and also in the work-life balance and the right to disconnect. So it is very broad, but it's still related to digital law and the human's right and like their rights. I also focused on e-commerce, for instance, and I did some comparative analysis of different jurisdictions worldwide. I also focused on IP and AI in this sphere. And that's actually also was the part of my course, which I took during my master's degree, because it's very popular and very hot nowadays that AI, generative AI, is kind of introducing into IP sphere. So I was also eager to make some research on this. So yeah, that's how my scientific part began. And I'm eager to continue it and to do my PhD as well.
Nice. I never heard of you mentioning that you wanted to continue your PhD.
Yes. First, I want to continue this scientific part. And I know that there are a lot of things I want to explore in details. So I think that PhD will be a very great way for me to do.
Nice. Are you planning to still do it in Lund?
That's ideal. That's ideally for me, because Lund University has a lot of great professionals in digital law, and specifically in AI in healthcare. So I think that I want to write my master thesis in AI in healthcare and focus more on ethical aspects in healthcare law. But yeah, like Lund University will be the ideal place for me, but I'm also open and flexible when it comes to choosing different universities to do my PhD in, so I can consider some different as well.
Cool. Okay, before I go into a little bit more details about what the technical aspects are about AI and discuss more about this, maybe I want to know more about you as a person. I know you have a lot of hobbies. I know you sing. I know you like to read a lot. Tell us more about what kind of things you do outside this very academic aspect of yourself.
Yes. So personally, I'm very creative. So since the age of 4, I started to play big tennis and I did it professionally for 10 years. And then it was the time for me to decide whether I want to proceed with tennis career as a sportsman or whether I want to focus on being a singer. Because also since the age of 4, I am still nowadays a professional singer and I have took part in more than 40 international competitions. So I performed my own country in very well-known competitions such as Eurovision and New Wave. And that was also a very good part for me to explore new countries, different cultures, to meet people worldwide. That also kind of influenced my background and what I have now, because I like to meet new people. I'm very open, very social going person. So yeah, that was my childhood and I still continue this path. And also I finished musical school so I can play piano and saxophone, which also helped me a lot when I sing, because I had one performance when I sing and in the breaks I play saxophone. That was very cool. So yeah, I'm very creative. I like to read. I like to explore new things. I like to travel and explore new countries. So that's what I do during my free time outside the scientific part.
You said you represented your country in Eurovision.
I took part in the national selection. So I got in top 10 singers all around the country. And I was in top 3 in my national selection. So that was in the live performance. And that was a bit nervous, but super cool. Because all my friends, all my relatives, they watched this performance and they were so proud of me. So that's very cool. Yes.
That's super cool. That's like a totally different side of you, of the very technically thorough person that I know that writes very thorough reports. I never knew even that you were that involved in singing. And like, do you still play the piano and the saxophone?
Of course. I think that skill will stay with you forever. So I still play piano, saxophone, tennis. That's a very big part of my life. Yeah.
Wow. All right. How do you find the time? I mean, courses in London are quite intense already during your master's. And I think it will get more intense when you decide to do your PhD there. So how's that? And how's that in Sweden?
That's what helped me to stay active, to stay involved in my life, because that part is a very big part of my life. So that's what helped me to enjoy, to relax, and just to spend time with myself and enjoy this. Because I'm very busy with my school and some other extracurricular activities, but I always try to find some free time, especially when I can play tennis, for instance, with my friends. that's a very good way to combine both meeting my friends and doing something which will be healthy and fun. So I try to do this like weekly, to meet my friends, to play tennis, to do something new, to travel. I also go to the choir in Lund University, where we can also sing and also play musical instruments if we want. So that's how I maintain my work and life balance, I would say.
All right. Okay, that's a good transition to kind of ask you a bit more about what made you interested in the field of AI and mental health. Because I think other than it being very specific on just what AI is, it's also very specific in that field. I don't think it's a lot. It's used intensely, AI and mental health. I don't think it relates to the first thing that people think about. Oh, AI, I can talk to it and it being my therapist. So what kind of made you go there?
So as I already said, I'm very focused on people, their well-being and their rights. So I tracked off all the tendencies in the sphere of AI, and I found that it's very, very hot in the mental well-being field. So I feel that I wanted to explore it more. I want to see the interaction of technology and a human. And I felt that exactly when a human interacts with AI, it can be in this field, because we can basically interact personally. And I wanted to explore which rights do people have, how to do it the way that it will be ethical for people, how to do it that AI will not make any harm for people. So that what made me interested being in exactly mental well-being sphere, because that's exactly when people meet technology personally and interact with it personally. I'm not saying about any chatbots or when you just Google something and you get some recommendations. That's not interesting because you don't have this connection, personal connection. But exactly in this sphere, you feel this. And I wanted to explore like this interaction and intersection between AI and people. So yeah, I'm exploring it every day and I see a lot of tendencies because every day AI is developing and we can see a lot of changes even in comparison to what was last year. So I want to stay up to date in this sphere. I want to explore a lot of new things which are happening in this sphere. And I feel that I want to be involved in mental well-being and see the human intervention with it.
Do you personally use AI in any way for your mental well-being?
Yes. For me, it's like the best way to just say what is in my mind and to just share what I feel and just to listen for some recommendations. Because as I said, I combine my studies, extracurricular activities, a lot of things. And sometimes I can be overwhelmed with all the emotions I have. So that's a way for me to share what is on my mind, to share what I feel personally, get some advice, get some recommendation, which is objectives. And yeah, that's the best way for me.
Nice. So maybe then I can go a bit towards what we do at PokerMind and what exactly made you think that this would be a good place for you to not just explore everything, is to work, to give advice on how things should be done. Because so far I've seen your role here and I think it's quite pivotal to everything we do. It's the thing that defines what PokerMind is in the long run. So why did you think that this is a good place for you?
Yes, when I first saw PokerMind and I saw its site, I saw that that's exactly the place where I would, as a user, come to ask for some help, advice, and some recommendations. I really appreciate that we have this link, that there is a human behind this technology. Because I feel that that's very important, at least for now. We cannot just relate on AI, because as I said, it can be different. It can be discriminating. It can have some biases. So that's exactly what make me be very involved in PokerMind, because I was very happy that it's not just the technology, it's not just the app. We have a lot of apps and you just talk, you get the advice and that's it. I was very happy that PokerMind has this connection, personal connection, that is not just the technology, but there is a person behind this technology. And then you can still book some meetings with professionals, whereas they still can have this personal connection with you. And it's not just the algorithms which are put into the technology. It's still a human interview. So that was what made me be very happy and very proud of what we do now. So I know that we have a lot of plans to develop our tools, but I will be just happy to help and to be involved in these projects and see how we can make it personal, ethical, and how we can still be compliant with privacy and individuals' rights in this digital and very rapid world.
All right. That's a good place to be in terms of what you want to do. Yeah. It's pretty clear to me that you have this vision. I think that since now a lot of people are skeptical of the capabilities of AI, a lot of people think that it's a bubble, that it will just disappear after a while. And it's good to see that you're invested in not just your time, but all the effort that you put into the work of actually shaping this sphere. So that's quite interesting to hear from your end. Maybe relating to that, what kind of things do you think AI in mental health could be not used well for, or the most horrible application that you could think of AI in terms of mental health?
Yeah, so I think that nowadays we really use digital technologies a lot, and that can mean that we kind of will lack the personal contact. So if we just relate on all these apps, AI tools, I'm afraid that we will lose these face-to-face meetings when we will share our emotions, for instance, to person and not to that just the screen of your laptop or the mobile phone, for instance. And also, I think that there may be, just in the worst case scenarios, there may be some disinformation or some harmful misinformation which can actually influence people. And that can contribute more to anxiety, stress, and fear that a person already has when he started to use this tool. So that can be in the worst case scenario if we don't stick to ethical rules and we don't make it transparent for user to use. Also, I think that we cannot just relate on the technology when it comes to personal feelings, personal health, just because it can worsen the patient's condition. So I still think that there should be, at least for now, the person which will take care of what AI says and give some adjustments to recommendations, some treatments, so that we still will be reliant on a person and not fully on the technology. But I think that AI is developing super fast. So we can just keep an eye on this development and just adjust everything that we have now to its development. So we will have this personal connection, but also AI, which of course will help professionals in determining some diagnosis or some treatment plan, for instance. So that can be very beneficial.
Other than losing the face-to-face aspect, what do you think ethically concerns you? Maybe from the perspective of a lawyer, maybe from the perspective of a person, whatever you prefer, maybe to both of them.
I feel that nowadays, AI, which is developed now, is just a weak AI. So it doesn't have a mind. It doesn't have sense of humor. It doesn't have this human feeling, which we usually have. So I'm just afraid that, at least for now, it will not replace the professional in this sphere, and that we still need this professional and personal connection. And also, as a lawyer, of course, I should mention the data privacy issues and some biases and discriminative outputs that can have. So I feel that AI should be transparent enough for a user so that the user will understand that, first of all, it interacts with the AI, with the technology, and not the professional. And also, I think that users should be involved in decision making. So users should understand which data is used to have these outputs. So the person will understand how the data is used what are the algorithms behind this technology? Why exactly does it give this result and this output? So that's very important. And also, I feel that sometimes we can have the loss of trust of AI because we may think that it's just like the way it works, that there are some algorithms behind it and it's just general. So I think that it's very important for a user to feel that all the recommendations AI has, it is personal. It is related to exactly this person with exactly these feelings, emotions, and some feelings it shares with us. So I think that that kind of are the main ethical considerations we have to think about, at least now. And then, as I said, we have the weak AI now. So we should think how AI is developed, because in 5-10 years, we may have a strong AI. We may have a super intelligence, which will actually replace human beings. And that can be that strong that we will actually not need any more professionals in this field. So when this situation, it's of course different types of ethical considerations. But what we have now is, yeah, it should be transparent, it should be ethical, and it should be in the interest of life.
Since you've mentioned the kind of weak or stupid AI that we have right now, what do you think of the people or the companies or the startups nowadays that treat AI as this kind of super intelligent being and they just throw stuff at it? What do you think of that? And what kind of problems do you think they'll face in a year or two? Because, I mean, now in my perspective, it can be good and it can be bad in two ways, because since it's developing so fast, maybe at some point what they're doing will work. But right now, what they should worry about for this?
I personally don't think that nowadays what we have is super, super AI. Because still nowadays, it just does some very basic stuff. Of course, it helps people. But personally, I think that like some recommendations which we have by AI is just not super, super intelligent and super AI. For instance, I can give the example of Spotify and the recommendations and algorithms it has. Of course, it helps people because we can have the playlist which are kind of generated for us according to our taste and what we like. That's of course helps people, and that's very good what we have now, but it's still not super AI. It's not super intelligent. When I mean super intelligence, I think that it will actually replace the person. Let's say in the healthcare sphere, I feel that there will be a robot which will make a surgery, and we will not longer need a person to stay there and to keep a control of the surgery. So that's what I mean when I mention super intelligence. When it comes to narrow AI, or it is called weak AI, which we have now, it is just developing. We already can see that it helps people and it makes our life much better and much easier. And especially when it comes to mental health sphere, we see that we can actually talk to AI and get some recommendations. So of course it saves our time and our budget just to go to the professional and have this meet-to-meet connection meeting. But I still think that we should be quite careful with AI nowadays, because AI is trained using a lot of data. And we don't know where this data comes from. We don't know which measures we can secure while having this data. So that can lead to some biases, that can lead to some leakage of this data. So I think that we should be very careful when it comes to mental health data, because it's a sensitive data. So we should be, considering it quite careful when dealing with AI and personal data.
And connecting with people and considering what kind of AI, do you think it's just the responsibility of the company or the startup, or is it also the people that put regulations on it? Right now, we have many regulations on AI from the EU, not so much from the US. What do you think is the effect of that, or is it even keeping up with the exponential development of AI?
So as a lawyer, of course, I should mention the EU AI Act, which came into force this summer. So it's very fresh, is a bit weak, just because we don't know exactly what the provisions stay. So as a lawyer, I'm very happy that at least for now we have this act, because it can at least help us to regulate the technology what we have now. Try to adjust the implementation of what we do now with the current rules. But of course, as I said, AI is developing rapidly, and I feel that this act will be amended quite a lot of times, or that can be actually being adopted another act which will regulate more detail and more specifically that sphere. Just because I feel that nowadays what we have is great, because at least we can check the, let's say, risks of AI, and we can adjust our technology to the risks and just make sure that what we do now is not harmful, for instance, and that we stick to these rules and regulations and that it is legal. But of course, I feel that, yeah, sometimes we have this gap, law gap, just because the technology develops a bit faster than the law adapts. So I think that can be an issue. But at least now we know and we can stick to the current regulations we have. And then in the future, we will see what will be developed after this.
So in your opinion, is it dependent on the laws? Should people just depend on the EU AI Act, or I think it's called the AI Blueprint in the US? Do they depend on those things to regulate how they use AI? Or do you think people to people should worry about this too?
So we can see that the EU AI Act was adopted this summer, but we started to use AI many, many years ago. And we didn't have the proper regulation which regulated this use. So we can make the conclusion that people still use it, even though the current regulation is not here yet. So I feel that this technology will be just developed and then the law will be adopted, which is not good from the law perspective and from the user's perspective. Because, of course, we want to feel secure and safe when it comes to digital law and use of technologies. But I just feel that it's kind of not possible now, just because sometimes we cannot control the development of the technology. And if we just stick to the current regulations and don't develop it at all, we will be just at the same place where we are now. So I feel that people, of course, will take carefully and seriously the current regulations, and they will not make it the opposite way, which will actually harm people. But I still feel that we will be developing AI, and then the law will come later and will regulate what we have now and maybe a bit what can be in the future, what we can expect.
So you think that the law usually follows the trend or follows what people are doing in a later stage, right?
At least what practice shows, yes. As a lawyer, I'm not very happy with this. And I feel that, of course, we should have first the law and then the use and the development of technology. But the practice shows this, and we can just accept it and just stick to what we have now.
With that, the idea of, I always call them the ones that got away, like the massive companies that came before the regulations. So the slow-ish response of regulations that came allowed companies, startups even, to grow massively before now they're in force, and they're slowing every startup that came afterwards. So it became a disadvantage to follow suit or to use AI in your application. Do you think that's something natural to innovation? It's just because one company like OpenAI innovated so much that they had to, or they grabbed the attention of lawmakers. And then, of course, this will affect every startup that came. So they have that advantage. Or do you think startups or companies should be all equal in the law?
That's a very interesting question. And I feel that when it comes to digital law, innovations and technologies, companies and startups are open to choose exactly the field they want to be specialized. So I feel that now we have a freedom to choose from. And if we want to develop this tool, just go for it, do it. And then the law will come and say, all right, maybe you have to adjust this development, this use according to our rule. Of course, it will not change significantly what you do. But of course, you have to stick to the rules and you should make these adjustments. But I personally feel that we are quite equal when it comes to digital law. First of all, just because this fear is super new, is fresh, and is developing. So companies can just choose what they're interested in and just be active and be first in this field. And then other companies, startup will come on the market and they will choose a different sphere, which can somehow be related to what you do, but it will be still different. So that's what I feel we have now, because this sphere is super broad. So we kind of don't have the company which leads it, whereas every company has its right to choose and be the first in this sphere.
Yeah, that's a really good perspective on this. Okay, I think that's everything I had to ask you. Do you have any final remarks or things that you want to tell newer startups, things you want to tell our listeners, anything of that sort?
Yes, for startups and companies who deal with AI, I would just recommend to keep an eye on what you do. Is it ethical? Is it transparent for the user to understand what you do, how you save the data, and what are the outputs and the algorithms behind the technology? For users, I would just recommend to not be skeptical and try something new, because as I said, this sphere is developing super fast. So just don't be skeptical and let it the first shot.
Perfect. Thank you so much for today, Lisa. It was really nice talking to you. And I think everyone that listened to this, I think, gained quite a lot. I would personally just send it to people that are new in the field of AI or other startups that are using AI in the field. So thank you so much for today. And hopefully we're going to have you again in other episodes. Maybe when something new comes up and disrupts things, or we have a new Pokemind feature that we would like you to give us input on ethically and from the legal aspect. So really, really appreciate what you talked about today. And yeah, see you soon.
Thank you, and see you soon. And I will be happy to participate next.